Kitty, Chapter 48. Mrs. Herneck had said her goodbyes up beyond the customs house, and Kitty and Jacob walked alone together down to the quay. The ferry was nearing departure. Smoke rose from the funnels, and a brisk breeze was furling the sails. The last of the travellers were ascending a gaily canopied gangway near the stern, while further forward a troop of men carried the luggage aboard. Raucous gulls swooped in the sky. Jacob was wearing a white hat with a broad brim, tipped far forwards to shade his face, and a dark brown travelling suit. He carried a small leather case in one gloved hand.
"You've got your papers?" Kitty said. "For the 10th time, yes."
He was still a little tearful after the parting from his mother, and this made him irascible.
"It's not a long voyage," she said peaceably. "You'll be there tomorrow."
"I know."
He tugged at the hat brim.
"Think I'll pass through?" "Oh, yes. They're not looking for us, are they? The passport's only a precaution."
"Hmm. But with my face—"
"They won't give it a second look. Trust me."
"Okay.
Are you sure you won't—" "I can always follow on. Are you going to give that guy your case?"
"I suppose so."
"Go and do it, then. I'll wait."
With only the briefest of hesitations, he moved away. Kitty watched him pass slowly through the hurrying crowds, and was pleased to see that no one so much as glanced at him. The ship's whistle blew, and somewhere nearby a bell rang. The quay was alive with activity now, with sailors, cargo men, and merchants hurrying past, with final orders being given, letters and packets being exchanged. On the deck of the ferry, many of the embarkees were standing at the rail, faces shining with excitement, talking happily to each other in a dozen languages. Men and women from distant lands, from Europe, Africa, Byzantium, and the East. Kitty's heart beat fast at the thought, and it made her sigh. More than a little, she wished to join them. Well, perhaps she would in time. She had other things to do first. On that terrible morning, they had fled, the two of them, to the Herneck factory, where Jacob's brothers concealed them in a disused room hidden behind one of the printing machines. Here, amid the noise and fog and the stench of leather, Kitty's wounds were tended and their strength revived. Meanwhile, the Herneck family prepared for the inevitable repercussions, for the searches and the fines. A day passed. The police did not arrive. Word came of the Golem's march through London, of the downfall of Duval, of the boy Mandrake's promotion. But of them, the fugitives, they heard nothing at all. There were no searches, no reprisals. Each morning, magician's orders arrived at the factory as usual. It was most curious. Kitty and Jacob appeared to have been forgotten. At the end of the second day, a council was held in the secret room. Despite the authorities' apparent indifference, the family considered it highly unsafe for Jacob and Kitty to remain in London. Jacob, in particular, with his distinctive appearance, was vulnerable. He could not remain in the factory forever, and sooner or later the magician Mandrake, or one of his associates or demons, would find him. He had to go somewhere safe. Mrs. Herneck expressed this opinion forcefully and at volume. When she had subsided, her husband stood up. Between puffs of his Rowanwood pipe, Mr. Herneck made a calm suggestion. The family's prowess at printing, he said, had already enabled them to bring down vengeance upon Tallow, doctoring his books so that his own spells brought about his destruction. It would be a simple matter now to forge certain documents, such as new identity papers, passports, and the like, that would make it easy for both children to leave the country. They could go to the continent, where other offshoots of the Herneck family, in Ostend, Bruges, or Basel, for instance, would be happy to receive them. This suggestion was greeted with general acclaim, and Jacob accepted it at once. He had no wish to fall foul of the magicians again. For her part, Kitty seemed distracted.
"That's very kind of you," she said.
While the brothers set to forging the documents, and Mrs. Herneck and Jacob began preparing supplies for the voyage, Kitty remained in the room, lost in thought. After 2 days' solitary pondering, she announced her decision. She would not be travelling to Europe. The white hat, with the broad brim, came rapidly towards her through the crowd. Jacob was smiling now, lighter of step.
"You gave him the case?"
she said.
"Yes, and you were right. He didn't give me a second look."
He glanced across at the gangway, then at his watch.
"Look, I've only got 5 minutes. I'd better get on board." "Yes. Well, see you then."
"See you." Look, Kitty.
Yes?
You know I'm grateful for what you did, rescuing me and all. But frankly, I also think you're an idiot.
Oh, cheers. What are you doing staying here? The Council of Bruges is made up of commoners. Magic hardly figures in the city. You can't imagine the freedoms, my cousin says. There are libraries, debating chambers, stuff right up your street. No curfews, imagine that.
The Empire keeps its distance most of the time. It's a good place for business. And if you wanted to carry on with your... He peered cautiously from side to side. With your... You know. My cousin reckons there are strong links to underground movements there, too. It would be far safer.
I know.
Kitty shoved her hands into her pockets, blew out her cheeks.
You're quite right. All of you are quite right. But that's sort of the point. I think I need to be here, where the magic's happening, where the demons are. But why? Don't get me wrong. I'm grateful for the new identity.
She patted her jacket pocket, felt the papers crackle.
It's just, well, some things that demon Bartimaeus said have set me thinking.
He shook his head.
This is what I can't fathom, he said. You're going on the word of a demon, one that kidnapped me, threatened you.
I know.
It's just he wasn't what I expected at all. He talked about the past, about patterns repeating themselves, about the rise and fall of the magicians through history. It happens, Jacob, time and time again. No one manages to break out of the cycle. Not commoners, not demons, not magicians. We're all stuck fast, trapped in a wheel of hate and fear.
Not me, he said firmly. I'm getting out.
You think Bruges is safe? Get real.
The Empire keeps its distance most of the time. That's what you said.
You're still part of it, like it or not. That's why I want to stay here in London, where the information is. There are great libraries, Jacob, where the magicians store their historical records. Pennyfeather used to tell me about them. If I could get access, get a job there somehow, I could learn something, about demons in particular.
She shrugged.
I don't know enough yet, that's all.
He snorted.
Of course you don't. You're not a cursed magician. But from what Bartimaeus said, the magicians don't know much either. About demons. They just use them. That's the point. We, the Resistance, weren't getting anywhere. We were just as bad as the magicians, using magic without understanding it. I already knew that, really, and Bartimaeus kind of confirmed it. You should have heard him, Jacob.
Like I said, you're an idiot. Listen, that's my call. A deep siren sounded from somewhere up on the ferry. Seagulls wheeled into the sky. He leaned forwards, gave her a rapid hug. She kissed him on the cheek.
Don't get killed, he said. Write to me. You've got the address.
Sure.
I'll see you in Bruges, before the month is out.
She grinned.
We'll see.
She watched him trot down to the gangway, thrust his papers under the nose of an attendant, receive a cursory stamp on his passport, and clamber up on board. The canopy was removed, the gangway drawn back. Jacob took up position on the rail. He waved to her as the ship moved away. His face, like those of the other travellers, was shining with excitement. Kitty smiled, rummaged in a pocket, and drew out a dirty handkerchief. She waved it until the ship banked and was lost from view around the curve of the Thames. Then Kitty replaced the handkerchief in her pocket, turned, and set off up along the quay. Quite soon, she was hidden by the crowd. This is Simon Jones. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Bartimaeus Trilogy, Book 2, The Golem's Eye, by Jonathan Stroud. This program was produced and directed by Robert Kessler. Executive producer, Orly Moskowitz. Text copyright 2004 by Jonathan Stroud. Production copyright 2004, Random House, Inc. All rights reserved.
Hello, this is Jim Dale, narrator of the Harry Potter audiobook series. Listening to audiobooks isn't just great entertainment, it's also a great way for your family to experience and enjoy books together. Studies have shown that listening to stories read aloud helps children build vocabulary, improve their reading skills, and succeed more readily in school. It's an important step on the road to becoming a good reader, and one of the best ways to help ensure a lifelong love of literature for the children you care about. Check your local retailer for the wide selection of audiobooks available from Listening Library. Or, if you would like to visit us online for more information, check our website at www.listeninglibrary.com. Thank you, and happy listening.